Hello, Internet. Welcome to episode 556 of... Wait. Sorry, I meant episode 223 of the Assorted Calibers podcast. You might be a gun nut if...
What episode number is it?
It is 223. The Second Amendment podcast is a little bit for everyone, and we are having an ACP roundtable. So, of course, as always, we will start with the lovely Aaron Paulette. How you doing, Aaron?
I am drinking heavily because I cannot people today.
Well, you picked the wrong goddamn rec room to walk into.
I know. Just traffic has turned me into the Kurgan, you know. Don't talk to me. Don't ever talk to me again. And then I would just want to start taking heads off. So that's... I'm just going to say right now, some of the topics I deliberately haven't read because they would spike my blood pressure. And it's just like, you know what? There are other people for this. I'm just going to in with Gandhi, out with Hitler.
That is some solid team playing, Aaron, and that is exactly how we do this. And, of course, we have the flowing blonde flaxen locks of David.
Have we met? Because apparently one of us picked the wrong week to stop sniffing glue.
Not it.
Ah, you haven't stopped sniffing glue. That explains it.
That is true. I mean, it smells so good. You know what smells really good is ether.
Chloroform.
It really does smell amazing. I remember.
Does it smell like chloroform to you?
We were doing an ether extraction in a chemistry lab, and like I'm pouring this, I'm like, okay, now I know why Hunter S. Thompson would huff this stuff. It smells fantastic, and if it gets you high, then all the better.
Have I told the story of my most personally disturbing Cards Against Humanity win?
Please.
Oh.
So we were playing with our friends and their son, who was 18 or 19 at the time. And he played the card, what advice would you give a young man just starting out in dating? And I had a card that I had to play, but I really didn't want to play, but it was the only card I could really play. And so he's reading through the different results, and he gets to mine, and he starts to read it out, and he just loses it. He's laughing hysterically. And he just starts showing this around, and his parents and I both... I mean, I knew what the card was, but when they see it, we were like, no, do not do that. The card said chloroform.
Yes.
I won the point, but I felt bad about it.
That was incredibly hilarious, David. I am pissing myself with laughter right now, ha. Huh?
Thank you for that honest emotional outburst.
Moving on, we have the man fighting crime in old Detroit, Oddball.
Yep, I'm here.
Dead or alive, you're coming with me.
That's right.
You also could have done
some
kind of
trouble.
Could have done some kind of Shaft reference. I'm talking about Oddball.
But yeah, so Oddball, you sound a little bit different because you are on location in Detroit.
That is correct. Yeah,
so you're in Detroit proper.
No, I'm in one of the suburbs.
He's in Detroit improper.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
And so there are no cyborg cops patrolling the streets?
Correct. Not at the moment, anyways.
Seems like a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. Actually, do you want to talk about why you're there? Or?
I'm up here dealing with some of my dad's stuff. And while we're up here, we're also visiting with... my cousin and aunt who live nearby.
Hello.
They left a little while ago, so I am woefully underprepared for this particular roundtable. But we'll see how it goes.
Team effort. You will definitely get thrown to the one story that you submitted. You might not have written it in the show notes, but it's all your fault.
Oh, that one. Yes. Okay. I can get good and ranty about that one.
Yes. All right. So anybody else got some points of order before we dive in? Because like literally this was one of those things of the, oh man, what are we going to do? Like I people start sending me and I start seeing news stories and I just like, oh, I'll put that in the browser, put that in the browser. I eventually got to the point where it's one of those, like, I went to go check my email and I couldn't find it and realized, oh, look, there's little scroll windows on the side of my browser. The scroll, scroll, scroll. There's your emails. So I thought, you know what?
That's not normal.
No, not for me. I don't like having a ton of tabs open. Like every tab is open for a very, very specific reason. And I try and I take great joy when I can close one because it is completionist.
Interesting. Disturbing, but interesting.
So actually I wanted to start off. Thing is, he actually said, this might be too inside baseball. I think David might like it.
Baseball.
Yes. Old Windways. He's submitted some stuff in the past for that. And he's the guy that was the mutual listener between, ACP and the Mind Killer podcast that, got me hooked up with my longtime friend who I did not know podcasted. And he also happens to be the members of the same gun club as me, the Mass Rifle Association, which is the oldest contiguously running gun club in the United States. And it was started in 1871 and has, or wait. Yeah, no, 1875. I'm just looking here, on the page and it has been going on ever since then. And there's a lot of interesting history. But he pointed out that, David, you mentioned, Patridge of the inventor of the Patridge sights. Yeah. He was on the board of directors for the Massachusetts Rifle Association.
Doesn't surprise me. I mean, he was a noted target shooter and firearm inventor of that time.
And there's also there's a series of guns called, and I'm trying to find who did them. Wally is like madly in love with these, but they are, frequently like heavily modified falling blocks called the Walnut Hill Rifles. And the club was formerly known as the Walnut Hill, Rifle Club. There's a hill covered in walnut trees. So it's called Walnut Hill and it's the backstop for the 200 yard range.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah, Walnut Hill Rifles were just—they were class of their own at the time.
Yeah, I mean they are really, really gorgeous, and I'm a sucker for falling blocks.
I'm a sucker for pretty much any single shot rifle, near enough.
Yeah, break actions don't do it for me.
Blocks fall, everyone dies.
Pardon?
Blocks fall, everyone dies.
I know I should get that reference.
I didn't quite get it either.
I do not get
that. Wow, you guys didn't get that reference?
Oddball, can you help us?
Rocks fall, everyone dies.
Ah, yes. Okay.
Yeah, I'm still not connecting dots.
Tough room. Never mind. Moving on.
I thought it was decent, Aaron.
Thank you.
Would somebody mind actually sharing with me what it is that I'm missing?
A trope of the, well, we don't know where else to go with the story, and I hate all these characters.
Rocks fall, everyone dies.
Rocks fall.
I was thinking movies because we were talking movie characters earlier.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
Okay, so yes. Yes, okay. I'm good.
Oh, look at that. TV tropes. Rocks fall, everyone dies. You are eaten by a Gru. All right, well, so that's that. I just thought I would share that because that was an interesting tie on that. Because, David, you taught me something new.
And that takes some effort. Not yes. The teaching part, the learning part.
So this next one,
I'm just going to let that pass.
Yes. Unfortunately, we're recording this in this bubble where right now it is Monday. So we do not know what is going to happen for the election. And then, of course, you are going to hear this either on Friday if you're a subscriber or on Monday for everybody else. And so you will maybe know the results, but who knows? They may just keep counting forever. But there is one ballot initiative on every ballot in the nation that is on gun control. So gone is the days when Michael Bloomberg put like a background check bill on everything. But this one here is Oregon Measure 114. And essentially, it requires, it makes it so that it requires a permit to be issued by your local police to buy a firearm. I'm not going to read through the text.
Okay, I'm going to take over here. All right, so Measure 114, it's the only gun control ballot across the entire country. And this was brought to my attention because there was a political ad that was done in faux blaxploitation mode with the funky beat and a black man talking about it and calling people fools and y'all and things like that, even though it's in the Pacific Northwest. And he's claiming that this is for gun safety. And so you really should vote for this in order to make people safer. So how does this bill make people safer? Okay. First of all, it's going to prohibit the manufacture, importation, purchase, selling, and possession, using, or transferring of magazines that take more than 10 rounds. Because criminals will listen to a magazine restriction, of course. Also, and this is the delicious part, ironically, because it's not quite Jim Crow, but it flirts with it. Because it requires that good old-fashioned, it's not even a pistol purchase permit. It's going to be a permit to buy any firearm. And that permit is going to require photo ID, fingerprints, safety training. Who knows how long that's going to be, because as we've seen with New York, if you allow the state to mandate it, they're going to jack it up as high and ridiculous as they can. Criminal background check and of course a fee payment to apply for the permit. And then he tops it all off with stating how this one will allow people to keep and bear arms. And he's making it seem like this ballot is completely in keeping with the spirit of the Second Amendment, when it's absolutely not. Because, again, I want to stress this, you know, the Second Amendment doesn't say anything about magazine restrictions, and it doesn't say you've got to get a good character reference in order to buy a gun. And that's exactly what this is. And people on Twitter are taking him to task, thankfully, because this will probably be used to deny minorities the right to purchase firearms for self-defense.
I'm just going to, agree with everything you just said 100%. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say I don't think it flirts with Jim Crow. I think it's tongue-kissing Jim Crow.
Yeah.
You require photo ID, fingerprints, safety training, criminal background check, and fee payment to apply for a permit to exercise a constitutional right. If that was required for voting, what would the reaction be?
Well, the only reason I didn't say it was explicitly Jim Crow is because this will affect people of all races and economic backgrounds. And the point of Jim Crow is that it didn't apply to white people, or at least affluent white people.
So maybe it's more Sullivan than Jim Crow.
Oh, firmly Sullivan.
Yes. Oh, definitely.
So we just don't want those folks.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so just that video is like an entire minute of tone deafness. And oh, boy.
is the video right up there with if you don't vote for me, then you're not really black?
That's hard to say because we're comparing apples and staplers. but they're both bad.
Yes, I know they're both bad. I just wasn't sure where on the spectrum of bad they fell in relation to each other.
Well, my personal favorite is in this video, he states that the criminals will have to abide by the same laws that we are.
Well, no, he didn't say criminals. He said something like the people who want to shoot. Yeah, here we go. I've got the quote here. The government procedures that we have to go through are the same procedures that the people who want to shoot you go through. Now, you can interpret that one of two ways, neither of which is very good. One of them is that he's claiming that the criminals will go through the same process, too. And, no, they're criminals. They're going to skip all this and buy the gun illegally, or he's stating that the people who want to shoot him are police and other, you know, allegedly law-abiding. He's playing the victim card, you know. Neither one of these are really good. Either he doesn't understand how criminals get guns, or he claims that everyone in the state would want to kill him potentially for no listed reason.
Yeah, I mean, there are really only two ways to take this kind of carefully crafted statement, is either useful idiot or malicious.
Why not both?
Because the useful idiots are generally not malicious, because they're idiots. The malicious can be idiots, but they generally lose their utility fairly quickly if they are. They're the ones who say the quiet part out loud and embarrass their superiors. But shall we move on to a happier topic? Which I think is almost any other topic on this list.
Absolutely. Shall we just move on down the next one?
To Iowa?
Yes.
No, I'm not going to move to Iowa.
Okay.
But I'm going to move to the article. I'll take this one, unless someone else prefer.
Please.
I don't know who put it in there. I was just reading through it.
I did.
Okay. So, in November, Iowa will have a ballot initiative to incorporate the right to keep and bear arms into the Iowa State Constitution. It goes, and I love this part, the amendment goes beyond just incorporating the language of the Second Amendment into Iowa's law books, as many other states have done, but will instead make any push for gun regulations nearly impossible while undermining any existing restrictions. I mean, warms my heart, people of Iowa, warms my heart. And then there's the I guess this might be the, maybe not the only money quote, but a great money quote of the actual amendment. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The sovereign state of Iowa affirms and recognizes this right to be a fundamental individual right. Any and all restrictions of this right shall be subject to strict scrutiny.
Ooh.
Right? How many gun control laws are likely to survive strict scrutiny at any level?
So here's what I took from this. And so one of the people objecting to this is Connie Ryan, the executive director of the Interfaith Alliance. I'm not really sure what that has to do with gun control, but it is an organization that's part of the Iowa Coalition for Responsible Gun Laws. And this is what she says. This is not a direct quote, but I feel the need to use my sarcasm font here. This amendment will tie the hands of Iowa justices indefinitely, preventing most popular gun regulations, like the prohibition on felons from possessing firearms, from standing against a judicial challenge. Now, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that the prohibition on felons from possessing firearms is not state level, but rather national in nature. I mean, it's enforced by the ATF, for crying out loud. I'm pretty sure that's right up there with the you can't buy a gun until you're 18, can't buy a pistol until you're 21 sort of thing.
So, yes, it is federal law that convicted felons cannot own firearms or prohibited people. However, it is primarily up to the state to define what is a felony.
Okay, that's a good point.
Hold on, David. I believe you're mistaken on that.
Okay, please correct me.
I believe that in federal law, it is stated that they define a felony as any conviction where the punishment can be greater than 1 year imprisonment.
Right, but that is up to the state in general. I mean, there are federal violations that can do that, but generally the state is going to determine what is a year or more prison.
Yeah, what's the sentencing guidelines?
Okay, I misunderstood.
The only point that I want to make here, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, is she's whining about something which this law can't affect because federal law has supremacy over state law.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So either she's ignorant or she's trying to scare people. 50-50.
Yeah, ignorant or malicious. But I do like the next part, which is, but the hands of justices across the United States may have already been tied by the Supreme Court. According to Andrew Willinger, executive director of the Duke Center for Firearm Law, in June, the Supreme Court ruled on the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin, overturning a New York law requiring concealed carry applicants to show proper cause for requesting a permit in their application. Conservative Justice Clarence Thomas, who authored the 6-3 decision, created a new test to evaluate the constitutionality of gun regulations, requiring the government to prove that firearms regulations are part of the historical tradition that delimits the outer bounds of the right to keep and bear arms. And lawsuit printer started going, brr.
Lawsuit printer go, brr.
Yeah, and they do mention the recent West Virginia case where the judge struck down the federal law requiring guns to have serial numbers. Although, I thought it was not that, I haven't read it, but I thought it was more that it wasn't so much of it that they couldn't have serial numbers, but they couldn't be charged for removing the serial number.
I believe you're correct.
Ooh, twice. But who's counting?
And that's the thing that I got is this. That was my big takeaway is this article is just the wailing and gnashing of teeth over essentially a state codifying the Second Amendment within their own constitution, which exists all over the various, specifically the East Coast states.
And the West Coast, the entire West Coast.
Do they all have, a right to keep and bear arms in their constitution?
I believe only a few states don't. New York is one of the ones that does not.
Oh, that's interesting. I assumed all the 13 original colonies all had it.
No, New York has got to be different.
Hmm.
But I believe said,
I believe a bunch of them have wording to the effect of yes, the individual does have the right to keep and bear arms, but the state can restrict it in view of public safety.
Yeah, something like that. Now, that the basically the wording of the Second Amendment is part of New York State penal law, but not part of the state constitution.
Go ahead, David.
I was just looking further down in the article, and it mentions, even before Bruin, which I still think should be called NYSERPA, even before NYSERPA versus Bruin, the push to give firearms the highest degree of protection in Iowa was well underway. In April 2021, Republican Governor Kim Reynolds signed a bill making permits optional for purchasing or carrying a handgun. 8 months later, Iowa Senate Republicans advanced a bill that would prohibit state and local law enforcement from enforcing any federal laws infringing on the right to bear arms. Under that bill, law enforcement agencies will be fined up to $50,000 if they employ officers who knowingly violate the Second Amendment. So that's got some teeth.
Jinx, mm-hmm. You owe me a Coke. The reason I believe it's called Bruin and not NYSERPA is because there's already another case on the books called NYSERPA.
Yeah, honestly, yes, and there have been several others throughout the years.
Now, why they don't call it NYSERPA 2, I don't know.
Interestingly enough, that's what they're calling it at NYSERPA.
And I'm firmly in David's camp. Is the hey, you're on the winning side. You get to be the buzz name of the court case.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it would be like some sports team gets all the way to the final sports ball game of the season and loses. You don't refer to them when you talk about the whatever sports ball game it was. You refer to the winners.
Yeah, they're wailing and gnashing their teeth over something that's already codified in the U.S. Constitution, and so many different states are trying to say, no, it doesn't, which is hilarious. Like, no, it doesn't. This doesn't count. This, we could do all sorts of restrictions because, yeah, no, it's just, this court case saying, no, it means what it says. Nah, they're only fooling. We think we found a loophole here or a loophole there.
Yep. Speaking of, Louisiana is one of three states, along with Alabama and Missouri, with strict scrutiny clauses in their constitutions protecting gun rights, all which were approved by the majority of voters in each state. In Alabama and Missouri, the prohibition on guns for felons has not been overturned. Now, this is right after the paragraph where it says that a district court judge ruled in favor of two plaintiffs who argued their inability to possess a firearm due to prior felony convictions was not constitutional under the state law. Or state constitution, rather, the Louisiana Supreme Court overturned that ruling. So all three of the states that have strict scrutiny clauses still prohibit felons from owning firearms at the state level. But this is just, it's just, the hits keep on coming. And meanwhile, New York is saying, thank you, sir, may I have another?
All right. Well, I think that ties in nicely. Oddball.
Yep.
Take it away.
So, recently, and I believe you guys touched on this in a previous ACP episode, speaking of U.S. versus Bullock, which is currently going on, which involves a gentleman who has some previous convictions on his record and was caught carrying and is now attempting to argue in front of the court that we're still at district level here.
This is, I believe, the doctor who is carrying concealed in Washington, D.C., was at a Smithsonian, saw the no guns thing, went to a security guard, said, hey, where can I put my gun, and then was arrested. That one?
Actually, I believe that this is a different one.
Okay, then which one are we talking about?
My brain parsed what Aaron said as doctor who was carrying concealed.
Quick bit of research that I brought up shows that this guy has a couple priors for theft, etc.
Okay, yeah, completely different thing. Then I don't know who you're talking about. Sorry.
But a similar case where this is actually he had the issue brought forth is whether or not prohibiting folks with felonies on their records from possessing firearms, while the good doctor, I believe, just had a misdemeanor. But at any rate, this judge has taken a bit of a different stance with the Supreme Court's decision with NYSERPA versus Bruin. In that he is basically in official court documents, basically told, stated that SCOTUS is full of
sugar.
Oh, dang it. This is not a mag dump. So I need to behave myself. I apologize. And is specifically stating that, well, SCOTUS is not a bunch of historians and judges are not historians and can't be expected to be historians and therefore cannot be expected to know the law, case law that precedes it, and other forms of precedence. Panya is giving me very strange looks.
So, I mean, are they basically saying that judges are too dumb to read history and understand it?
Yes, basically. Let's hear. Also has stated that on a consistent basis, court and legal scholars have been on a different side of the issue than, quote, mainstream historians, which, he very much tipped his hand by saying that, quote, and we are not experts in what white, wealthy, and male property owners thought about firearms regulations in 1791, unquote. Oh, and to continue the quote, yet we are now expected to play historian in the name of constitutional adjudication, unquote. And to that, I say to this man, yes, that's exactly what we expect you to do. We expect you to do your job. That is your job. And guess what? Not only are you supposed to have some clue about the history of the law, but if you have some issues with, if your memory is a little bit fuzzy on it, it is the job of both sides both sides of the bench, both counsels, both the defense and attorney and the prosecution, to remind you what the history of the law is. That is their jobs. Now, there is something to be said of, you are just a district court judge. You can read it completely by, okay, this is what the law currently says. We are not, it is not at your level to determine what is constitutional as was not. That's for a appellate court, et cetera, et cetera. But to say that it's not viable for a judge to know the law and have some grasp on the history of the law is saying that you not only are unable to do your job, you are unwilling to do your job. And frankly, I think that this judge should be sanctioned, if not pulled from the bench. It won't happen because that pretty much never happens, but that would be nice. And oh, by the way, the couple mainstream historians that he cited in this order, saying that he clearly needs to call upon a historian. He cited an article from the New Yorker and an article from Slate, which we know how fair and unbalanced those two.
Fair and unbalanced. That if that was not said intentionally, it should have been. I was actually waiting for you to add Mother Jones to that list.
But now, in fairness, also there is the thing of there is something to be said of it is reasonable for a judge to say, look, we are getting into a very technical part of a field here, and I need help. But in this particular case, no, I'm sorry, you don't. And actually stating that that SCOTUS didn't know what it was talking about in a court order is brash, I might say.
Well, I mean, another thing to point out is that of the people in like historical senses, at the very, very start of history, the first people to be literate and to create a written history were more or less people who were recording the laws of the land and the judicial rulings and punishments. I mean, mm-hmm. I might be getting a little bit more once, you know, we start getting to like the very, very first days of recorded history. But like one of the big things that everybody who studies law in the United States learns about is English common law, which is
right.
You know, hundreds of years old. I mean, I'm not a legal expert now. I'm talking a bit off the cuff, but English common law is like very, very early historical law and legal judgments that were recorded. And that's the whole big thing, is everything gets written down. And, you know, all of these things, if it's submitted as evidence in court, it is now official public record. And
Art so,
yeah, exactly. So the idea that they don't know, it's one of those, like, these laws were all written down. They were written down, and then they recorded, and then the judge's interpretation of the laws were all written down and recorded, or archived, and existed. So, yes, maybe a judge might say, I need a little bit more help. I might need some historians that are a little bit more versed in this particular field of law that I am now forced to do a judgment, and we might need to do an extended recess for research and report writing and things like that. But in no way, shape, or form should a judge not know history. I mean, it's the whole nature of the word precedent. It's historical court rulings.
Weird.
There's no time limit on that. Was somebody saying something?
You. A lot.
Yes.
Zintite.
Oh.
Ah.
Oddball cut out. Yeah. I thought I heard Oddball start to say something. We will see if he can find his way back on. He had some technical difficulties earlier on. Yeah, but it is a really a laughable article if it wasn't for the fact that they are trying so hard to just ignore what they don't want, and they're looking for any justification.
Yep. They really are grasping at straws. And it would be amusing if it wasn't so deadly serious.
Yeah. Yeah, if it wasn't so deadly serious, and it was literally standing in the way of these lawsuits that, I mean, Second Amendment advocates like us have been waiting for decades, you know, if not, our entire lifetime. And it's just, no, nuh-uh. Especially, it's one of those, like, the whole, like, we keep posting the meme in chat of the Clarence Thomas. Did I stutter? Because it's one of those, like, the Heller decision is a really, really good decision. All right, let's see if Oddball can speak now.
Okay, I think I'm back now. That
yeah.
Had a bit of an internet blip. Sorry about that.
It's all good. You it sounded like you were about to say something before it cut you off.
No, I was hearing you talking about British common law, and I was going to say, yeah, and it is not uncommon at all for that to be cited in U.S. court cases, which, yes, means that you will have to have studied the history of the law.
Mm-hmm. So, but the whole point of the Heller was a really, really good ruling, and, you know, McDonald as well, but it was not as just iron-fisted in its writing as as NYSERPA v. Bruin. And, like, because I do think that, like, I mean, the judges that voted in favor of Heller and McDonald had to have been pissed just to see how much those rulings were being completely ignored in hopes that it would just go away.
Right.
So finally, when this case comes through, it was one of those, okay, Clarence, let's make it perfectly clear. And even then, this super duper clear ruling is just going through. And the history of it is not in their favor. The only
it really isn't.
I mean, there is a bunch of historical stuff on concealed carry, and I'm not an expert going, you know, far back to the late 18th century or the super duper early days of the 19th century. But there certainly always was a talk. Like, I mean, I'm trying to remember, was it Thomas Jefferson that essentially said that it was rude to have a pistol concealed, you know, carry a pistol, but carry it openly.
I don't believe that was him. It may have been someone of that contemporary period.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the attitude of the time, was honest men carried their weapons openly and only brigands and scoundrels carried them concealed. And we've kind of now reversed that.
Mm-hmm. And so there might be some stuff on, you know, carry, at least on the methodology of it. But the only other laws that restricted who could keep and bear arms were laws that essentially declared blacks and natives and other non-whites as not people. And, yep. and why the 14th Amendment was so important in there, because that's the one that said, oh, we're not doing that anymore.
And that was one of the things when New York, after the NYSERPA decision, came out and said, well, it's always been historically allowed to disarm certain groups, and didn't think about the actual details of that.
Well, and also there's the bit of a, and I believe this judge is trying to make the same argument that, oh, no, the proper interpretation of the Second Amendment is that it's a collective right, which
was made up whole cloth.
Yeah, is just ludicrous.
Yep. Yeah. How many times are the people mentioned in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights? And how many of those times does it mean a collective as opposed to the individual?
Yeah, you know what our founding fathers used when they wanted to assert that the collective had the right to do something?
The state.
Yes, that was the state, not the people.
Yep, but that's because something's in plain English doesn't mean someone's not going to try to twist it to their own ends.
Very true.
So, do we cover all the beats that you wanted on that one, Oddball?
I think so.
It was a really, really good video, and I highly recommend people make sure to go to the show notes and watch that one. And watch it too. Why not? Because that makes sense. That I just
yeah.
Said.
Yeah, I do have to say, Guns and Gadgets. He runs a pretty good YouTube channel, and I watch him an awful lot. And one of the things that I enjoy is he actually has a tendency to link to things. Like he linked to the judge's order that he was talking about it, which not all YouTube folks do, and I very much appreciate showing his work and allowing people to dig deeper into things.
So, speaking of twisting things to fit your interpretation, I want to know who linked this New Yorker article.
I that was me.
It must be one of the 12 people who read the New Yorker.
Okay, I'll let you tackle this in a minute. I just want to say this is one of those things that I mentioned earlier that I could not get through. It spiked my blood pressure because I'm going to admit my bias here. The person who wrote this article is basically claiming that Dr. John Lott is making shoddy conclusions. And Twitch, no, this is the man who shows his work with an almost, 4chan level of detail here. The man is I don't know if I can say, okay, this is meant as a compliment. The man is very Asperger's in his attention to detail. There is absolutely no slight meant. I mean that as a compliment to his thoroughness and attention to detail. And then some jerkwad from the New Yorker, who I've never heard of, is like, well, no, actually, this guy. And it was just, no, I'm done. I'm going to let someone else handle it. So weird. Tell me about this article, which made me rage quit.
Oh, you know what? It even says it right in the opening byline. It was one of those, you were saying this person wrote, I'm like, who wrote that? I forgot. It's Mike Spies. I don't know how he pronounces his last name, but I'm like, I know this man. And then at the very, very intro of it, this story was published in partnership with The Trace, a nonprofit news organization covering guns in America.
There you go.
Omitted from that was also wholly owned by Michael Bloomberg.
He is one of the pustules on Michael Bloomberg's withered scrotum.
Correct. Yes, this guy is not a New Yorker. I mean, he might be a New Yorker.
You're giving him too much credit, Aaron.
He is. I mean, he does live in New York, but his main bread and butter is writing articles for the Michael Bloomberg's The Trace in attempts to feel even-handed and make it not sound like it's a direct publication from every town, because it's totally a different group.
Totally.
Yeah, and let's see, get down to this. He does specifically, I'm trying to remember which quote-unquote researcher he cites as a way to debunk Lott. I believe it was David Hemenway, gosh, this is a longer article than I remember. I didn't read this whole thing.
Where he claims that John Lott's methods and findings have been repeatedly debunked. I need to stop talking, but this is making me froth at the mouth.
Oh, I tried to read it, and I got, I don't know how far through it, probably not very, because there have been numerous attacks on Dr. Lott over the years, but they generally attack him personally because when they try to go against his methodology and data, they find that he has, as you said, been very detail-oriented and has copious lists of sources.
Yeah, I mean, even I, for writing my fisks, I have made it a point to double-check his work. And and there's a couple instances where I will take issue with him. One, his book is called More Guns, Less Crime. That's the title of it. And in fact, in some instances, it is more guns, same number of crime, but at no point is there more guns, more crime.
That's not as catchy a title.
No, it is not. And he also, I went through and did the exact same analysis that he did on spree shootings and gun-free zones. And I found, he said it was like 90%. I found it to be like 75%. So needless to say, those are the ones where he quote unquote screwed up. That is a John Lott screw up.
With some of that, I know with defensive gun uses, for example, he's talked about this. I've heard him talk about it, that the problem is there's so little data that it's almost all extrapolated.
Mm-hmm.
And because up until, I mean, honestly, this didn't change until well into the, probably the early mid 90s, was the chance of a person using a firearm for defensive purposes, legally having that firearm, were fairly low if it was a handgun and they were out of their home. So they went unreported to a massive degree. Yeah. The fact that when the CDC started doing their research was coming up with similar numbers, so they stopped doing their research, I thought was rather telling.
And I have here, I found it was David Hemenway. Let's see.
This is a Hemenway?
What's that?
How much is a Hemenway?
I don't know how to answer that one. Warn the flaws of
I was going to say, the way you usually answer that kind of thing is, David, go lie down.
Yes.
Well, I mean, perhaps a funnier way to do that would be in metric or imperial.
There you go.
An imperial Hemenway.
in refrigerators.
don't worry, Dr. Hemenway. We are laughing at you. Yeah, but he quoted, let's see. Oh, where was I getting to? And I don't know how good this is, but either way, Hemenway is literally one of the people that got us the that's not the Tia Hart, the Dickey Amendment.
Yes,
because literally
you can do all the research you want, but you can't use it to push policy.
Correct. And he was one of the guys along with Arthur Kellerman, Cookie and Garen Wintermute, that were cooking up bunk studies and using CDC funding to do so. And yeah, finally the government just stepped in and just said, no, you can do scientific research, you cannot do anti-gun propaganda on the public's dime.
Yep. And there was all sorts of screaming and wailing and gnashing of teeth over that decision.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you'll find this amusing or not, but I frequently confuse the Dickey Amendment with the Dick Amendment, and I have to look up which one is which.
Which one's the Dick Amendment? I actually don't know.
It's actually the Dick Act, which, title of your sex tape, is better known as the Militia Act of 1903, which enables the Congress to create the early National Guard and things like that. And that's where a lot of people cite the whole the organized militia versus the unorganized militia and things like that.
Mm-hmm, the collective right.
And so both of them have some degree to do with guns, and I just have to remember which one is which.
But yeah, they were super upset about it. And of course, as I mentioned in my last Fisk, Michael Bloomberg finally did what we'd always been saying is one of those, like, you guys have an insane billionaire as your, like, patron saint for gun control. Why are you trying to take U.S. taxpayer dollars and trying to, like, sidestep around this? Why don't you just pay for your own damn studies? And now they do. And done
I'll under start the guys- my own damn studies with hookers and blackjack.
Yeah, but the great thing is that Michael Bloomberg bought himself a school off of a well-established university. So
Blackjack and hookers.
Exactly. The Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. So therefore, people just see Johns Hopkins. Oh, yeah, that was the university Woodrow Wilson taught at.
Oh, that's clearly a reputable place.
Yes, clearly this is above board, and not realizing the Center for Gun Control is or the Center Against Gun CSGV, whatever the complete and utter psychos, the people that actually published George Zimmerman's home address,
Coalition to Stop Gun Violence.
Yes. Yeah. They were
nice.
Yeah. The people who've routinely like just gone after personal attacks of people. I mean, they've gone after me. And
that's understandable, though.
I mean, to be fair, I enjoyed the hell out of it. If you don't know where it is, just go read my blog for a little bit because I linked to them. I wanted you to read what they wrote about me. But he purchased his own university so that he could crank out anti-gun propaganda studies without worrying about federal interdiction and to have it have that air of scientific study about it. And this is just an offshoot of that. And again, they are concerned about Dr. Lott because he is a direct threat, because he's not even like he's I mean, I don't know how much of which one of us here knows Dr. Lott the best. I have rubbed elbows with him a few times, but I haven't really had too much more than a few passing words with him.
You very much know him better than me.
I chatted with him for a bit at the Concealed Carry Expo in Texas a few years ago. I wouldn't say I know him well, but we chatted.
I mean, I was actually specifically wondering about Oddball because it's one of those, like, he seems to frequently be at Oleg's place as well. Oleg and him are quite well acquainted.
I know that he and Oleg are well acquainted. I didn't realize that he was there regularly.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if I've ever run into him over there.
I have just heard a several stories I think it was actually a Wellowit was said, like, one of like the stories is just the, oh my god, like I'm hanging out with Oleg Volk and Dr. John Lott is in the other room doing a phone interview with CNN or one of those C-SPAN and all this, you know. I can't remember if there was somebody else that was famous that was there, but of course also at the same time, like, I am so starstruck, and yet everybody, like every normie in my life, has no idea who any of these people are.
Sounds about right. Yeah.
Except for Hickok 45. Everyone knows Hickok 45.
You'd be surprised.
Who hasn't accepted my friend request on Facebook, by the way?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Mine either.
I try not to take it personally, but I mean, we actually met, and I've got a photo with him when we spoke at the pro-gun rally in Tallahassee however many years ago. It's like, yeah. Dude, you know me.
I don't know if this is anything to do with it, but I do know that there are limits to the number of accepts you can have, and he might have hit that limit. So I've had other public figures talk about that, where, you know, until somebody unfriends me, I can't accept any more friends right now.
I like your answer. I'll believe that.
Okay, because like I said, he hasn't accepted mine either, but he doesn't know me from Adam.
I did send him a friend request, so I don't know. I can't chime in. Oddball, are you friends with Hickok 45?
No, I believe I'm following his public persona on Facebook, but no, I'm not friends with him on Facebook.
Gotcha. All right, now for the Jewish and the New York section of the show, I have invited a Jew from New York. David.
Hello. A pleasure to be here tonight. All right. So this first article is from Bearing Arms from November 6th. And the headline is New York State Jewish Gun Club's Scathing Response to Non-Action of Court. So as we've discussed previously, one of the aspects of the, and I'm not going to call it by what the state named it, the drastic increase in restrictions after the Nyserba versus Bruin decision that New York shoved through. One of the things was the sensitive places aspect, which we've mentioned here as well. And all houses of worship are considered sensitive spaces where firearms are not allowed, and having one on the premises would be a felony. And so it started off with synagogues, because you know the number one type of house of worship, even though we have small numbers, we are persecuted beyond our numbers. And so some of the rabbis and some of the members of the congregation were like, whoa, 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 why are you trying to disarm us when we're under attack? And then some of the Catholic and, or sorry, Christian, because I don't want to leave out any of the different sects. Some of the Christian and then some of the Muslim places of worship joined in on this as well. So basically,
I didn't know that mosques had joined in. I was actually hoping for that, because then it would be a delicious trifecta of the three largest religions in the United States. Oh, I was so hoping for that. Hooray.
Yeah. It's from what I've heard, it's not many mosques.
It doesn't matter.
But as soon as there was one, yeah, it was a thing. I'm now anxiously waiting for the Buddhists to step in.
You are joking,
someone
right?
is attempting to kill you, it would be reasonable to try to kill them too. The Dalai Lama.
It's the Dalai Lama.
Yeah. Yep.
But anyway, so the houses of worship have brought a lawsuit against New York State, Goldstein versus Hochul, and apparently the court is giving it a slow walk. And here's one of the quotes. I write to inform this court of highly relevant developments, including the issuance of a preliminary injunction from the U.S. District Court for the Western District of New York, and the issuance of a warning from the Federal Bureau of Investigations about credible threats of violence to Jewish houses of worship. And then talked about movement for a temporary restraining order, preliminary injunction, and that was at the end of September, and basically nothing has happened since. The preliminary injunction hearing was set for November 3rd, and then the hearing in Hardway, location in New York, went forward as scheduled, and U.S. District Judge Sinatra, from New York, issued his decision and order granting the preliminary injunction the same day. So it did finally start to move a little bit, but at the October 29th hearing, the New York State Jewish Gun Club's letter to the judge further stated, by contrast, this court denied plaintiff's application for a TRO and put off the preliminary injunction hearing for another month. As the date for the hearing approached, the court told us that it would not allow any testimony to be taken at the hearing, and that the hearing, in essence, would be an oral argument. Despite this representation, and despite the one-month lead time, the court issued a list of factual questions for plaintiffs to answer at And at the conclusion of the hearing, plaintiffs' counsel renewed their application for a TRO, stressing the urgency of the situation and the ongoing constitutional harm to plaintiffs. The court denied that and instead directed plaintiffs to submit sworn written responses to its questions. So again, it's just, and then at the end of that, and this is for, I think this is also for the October 29th hearing, that was stated that hours ago, the Federal Bureau of Investigation released a bulletin that had received credible information of a broad threat to synagogues in New Jersey. Obviously doesn't apply to the court case in New York directly, but as anyone knows, a good chunk of New Jersey's border is also New York's border. So yeah, so that was November 3rd was the FBI. So they're still fighting this, and the New York state courts are just playing the game, trying to run out the clock or trying to run out the bank.
David, I am pleased to give you some very, very good news. And this is breaking news. Rob Romano tweeted this about 5 hours ago, and the judge issued a preliminary injunction against numerous parts of New York's Bruin response bill, and one of those things mentioned is, I can't find it right at the moment, but one of the things he mentioned was the prescription against carrying in houses of worship.
Ah, so the judge finally did apply the is it a TRO or preliminary injunction? I didn't quite catch that.
I'm not quite sure what I said, to be honest.
But there is some type of hold on the application of that part.
So here we go. Accordingly, it is ordered that defendant Hochul is dismissed from this action as a party, and it is further ordered that plaintiff's motion for a preliminary injunction is granted in part and denied in part, et cetera, and further enjoined from enforcing the following provisions of the Concealed Carry Act, and then they list them. Let's see, the provision requiring good moral character, the provision requiring names and contact information of the applicant's spouse and other adults in the home, the provision requiring the 3 years of social media.
Those are all being put on hold?
Yes. They are enjoined from enforcing those provisions. I'm still reading.
That's really good news.
And one of those, you know, the following sensitive locations provision, including, and they specifically state, any place of worship or religious observation.
Nice. Because that would also be the yeshiva schools, have been attacked in the past.
Are schools, I'm not trying to be difficult here, but schools are schools. They're not places of worship.
They're private. So they're not part of the educational system.
Yeah, the Gun-Free Schools Act only applies to Department of Education schools.
Oh, okay. Anyway, there is a link in the show notes, and if you go and you blow up all the attached things. Oh, actually, I'm sorry. It looks like there's a PDF here of the same thing, and yes, and so yeah, go through that. And so the good news is, at least for the moment, that crap is put on hold.
Excellent. That's a good sign. Weird. If I could ask for one request, is when Aaron says breaking news, can you find a little audio clip of the news to just put quietly under her voice?
I'll try to grab that. Yes.
Because that's where my brain went. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Aaron. That is excellent news.
Mm. You are quite welcome.
Ah, that's actually quite a relief for some of my co-religionists who have been quite concerned about this.
Does it warm the subcockles of your heart?
Mm.
The thing that bothers me the most about this is the fact that it's just a complete and utter blanket ban. So even the leader of the religion, the rabbi, the priest, whatever you want to say, the person who is in charge of it, the person who can repaint it, the person who can decide to shutter the place if they needed to, the people who decide when the services are, even they can't decide that, hey, we can have a firearm in here. Like, that is, I mean, it's, I always find myself in these situations looking at these like super duper ridiculous, where like, all right, I'll step back to something that's still ridiculous, such as saying, all right, look, the people that are coming in off the street, they might be restricted. Don't care. It's stupid. You know, if they're not running metal detectors, then there's no damn point, because the bad guys are just going to they don't
walk
care.
Walk right through. Yep.
Exactly. But it's one of those, okay, that makes a whole lot of sense. But if the people who are actually leading the worship or all that, they can do whatever they damn well want, you know, so long as it's legal. And that's what the Constitution says, is yes, it's legal.
Yep. Now, the other thing, this actually might be what Aaron was referencing, and I just didn't read it thoroughly enough. I was just hitting the highlights, was because you mentioned that Rob Romano just put it up a few hours ago.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that I'd put in the link to the Knitter feed and then the actual PDF of the TRO, but I didn't find the part regarding the places of worship. So there goes my reading comprehension skills. But it's just the judge issues preliminary injunction against numerous parts of New York's Bruin response bill. Yeah, okay, that was exactly what Aaron was reading from, and I apparently did not find the detail I was looking for in my first go-through.
Can we just laugh at the fact that you're the one who provided this for the show notes and you didn't read it?
I read it. I scanned it because it's 184 pages.
Well, yeah, but the knitter thing, it's like, it'll blow that sucker up. It's there.
Yep, well, I was going to follow up with that. I just didn't realize that the places of worship was included. But I would like to point out that NYSERPA versus Bruin, Justice Thomas's portion of that was 69 pages.
Nice.
Now you owe me a Coke. And the concurrences and dissents add another 66 pages. This judge's, which I forget the name of the judge off the top of my head, but this judge who actually wrote up this was, I'm trying to find the quote because it's just really good. But yeah, NYSERPA versus Bruin was 135 pages. The decision itself was 69 pages, nice, with 66 more of concurrences and dissents. The decision slapping down the CCIA is 184 pages, and it's only that short because the judge trimmed their response, quote, for the sake of brevity, unquote, seven times. That has got to be just one of the most slaptastic rulings since Justice Thomas's in NYSERPA versus Bruin. The judge said that if the plaintiffs had standing, he likely would have upheld the ban on guns in Times Square. But they didn't. He would have enjoined the bans on guns in libraries, adult summer camps, and shelters if the plaintiffs had standing. So he's just repeatedly saying, you didn't have standing, you didn't have standing. So he is the judge who's going through this is basically all of the, well, you can't challenge that anti-gun law because you don't have standing, which is something that we've complained about.
Well,
repeatedly.
It almost sounds like he's saying, hey, guys, bring me someone with standing so I can uphold this.
Well, I don't know if the state can have standing.
Well, no, it's almost as if the judge is talking to prospective plaintiffs.
Ah, well, yeah, but he's saying that he would have upheld these parts of the law if the state had had standing.
Oh, I misunderstood. Oh, okay then.
Right, yeah. So he said he would have upheld the restriction on Times Square if the plaintiffs had standing, the plaintiffs being Governor Hochul in New York State.
I understand now. I misunderstood before, I understand now.
Yay, we're together. And it is Judge Sudeby. Glenn Sudeby, U.S. District Judge. So thank you, Judge Sudeby, for doing what you could. And this may not have warmed the cockles of my heart, but it warmed the muscles of my heart. Alive, alive, oh. But there was another pull quote that... Was this it? Oh, man, this thing is long. I just scrolled past. Ah, no, not with it.
So today I learned that David's cockle isn't a muscle.
Well, it's cockles and muscles, alive, alive, oh, according to Molly Malone.
Darling, get your head in the gutter and think about what I said.
I'm a marine biologist. I got that one. And scallops.
Let's see. I'm just trying to find. Ah, the state defendants also liken zoos to playgrounds. having grown up in New York City and played in those playgrounds, they're not actually far wrong here. The court finds the regulation in zoos more burdensome than the regulation in playgrounds because adults more commonly frequent zoos without children than they frequent playgrounds without children. Furthermore, the burden on law-abiding responsible citizens who have already obtained a license to carry concealed appears even more unjustified when one considers that zoos are more than capable of instituting policies prohibiting concealed carry themselves. Simply stated, the court finds that based on the analogs provided by the state defendants, this state-imposed ban in zoos is disproportionately burdensome as compared to its relevant historical analogs. For all these reasons, defendants are preliminary enjoined from enforcing this regulation with regards to public parks and zoos during the pendency of this litigation. But I just, that line, The state defendant also likened zoos to playgrounds caught my eye. I was like, yes, that's the one. I got to make sure to mention that. Oh, I mean, but it's 100
playgrounds that are like zoos.
I was in playgrounds that were like zoos. They're just fewer wild animals in zoos. But like I said, this is 184 pages of this. I mean, this judge really went to the breaking down bit by bit. And it just shows how insane New York was being with the fact that the preliminary injunction on this one state law is almost three times as long as the Thomas portion of the decision. And that's just wow. So my advice to New York, pardon?
I don't remember the exact title, but it's something about Brandolini's asymmetry principle. The amount of effort required to refute BS is, an order of magnitude larger than it is to churn out the BS in the first place.
Yep. And so there's got to be some legislative corollary to Brandolini's law.
Well, we're seeing it in action.
Yes, but we need to come up with a name for it.
You're soaking in it.
And I'm wondering if we can refer to it as Sotheby's corollary to Brandolini's law.
I like it.
Because he's demonstrated it very well here. It, in some ways, just like I said, I just scanned through his TRO. And this is part of the reason it confused me was because this was Antoniuk versus Hochul, not Goldstein. But scanning through that, it was very much, or it reminded me of when David Patterson was governor of New York State for his brief time after client number 9 stepped down. And the state legislature sent him one of their usual massive bloated budgets. And normally what the governor would do is he would approve it or he'd veto it. Governor Patterson, who, by the way, is legally blind, went through and vetoed every page individually in this, 1,200-page document.
Not so just no, but hell no.
Exactly what I was going to say. And it was shortly after that the attempts to destroy him and make him step down began in earnest and were ultimately successful. Didn't agree with a lot of his policies, but I appreciated his chutzpah.
Oh, my.
Anywho, that's all I've got for those. And then there was something about video games.
Yeah, and I actually thought this was going to be oddballs, but it's not. Weird, you actually talked about something that isn't NetHack.
Well... To be fair, this is a story that was found.
By
friend of the show with a common name, this was just, and I just was. He said my thoughts exactly, which is I'm so glad that there's a group talking about banning video games that's not the NRA. But yes, there is a group called Project Unloaded. And it is going after the latest Call of Duty because evidently you aim guns at unarmed civilians. I have not played it because it's a game with graphics.
It's not an ASCII game is what you're saying.
Exactly. I mean, ASCII is the resolution is so much better.
This actually makes sense because he also loves revolvers.
I do love revolvers.
He loves revolvers. He loves ASCII games. Now, if only he was also big into black powder, that would be the trifecta.
Yeah, I haven't gotten
it. He's still the tech expert on handgun radio.
Well, that's a really low bar. I mean, a really, really low bar. Love you, Ryan, but my God, are you a boomer.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
I don't know if this is relevant or not, but someone actually posted a link to one of the Pink Pistols things about how you can tell if developers shoot guns. And I wanted to see which game it was, and it's not telling me because it pops up in a freaking TikTok thing. But what they're saying is that this particular game has a function where you can drop your gun so that it's not aiming in front of you so that you don't flag your allies.
Like a low ready set option?
Yes. And
oh yeah,
I was kind of hoping it would be the one that they're griping about in this one, but I don't think it is.
I was looking at that link, and my favorite comment so far was somebody saying, to combat these, quote, dangerous myths about gun use, unquote, how about we teach gun safety in schools and make kids learn the four rules of gun safety from an early age? Project Unloaded, you game for that, or do you really think being a killjoy trying to cancel Call of Duty is going to work? Spicy.
The game is Ground Branch.
Ground Branch. Haven't heard of that one.
By the way, I know
Fallout 4 does that, actually.
I looked up the director of Project Unloaded, the founder and director of Project Unloaded, Nina Vinick, and she and the first hit for her name was exactly where I wanted to go, which is LinkedIn. So the first listing is founder and executive director Project Unloaded, August 2021 to present. Before that, she held multiple positions with the Joyce Foundation.
But they're unbiased.
Yes. So that these are that was the group that Barack Obama was on the board of directors of when he was in Chicago politics. It's a Chicago-based anti-gun group.
He had a paid position from them. I don't know if he actually ever served on their board.
Yeah. And I think it's probably mostly been co-opted by Michael Bloomberg. It's certainly one of their major groups rolled into Giffords, but essentially when there's the local group that is ceasefire blank, such as we just talked about ballot initiative 114 that was brought forward by Ceasefire Oregon, and that is a Joyce subsidiary. Or at least was. I'm not really exactly sure the status of the Joyce Foundation now. I haven't been hearing a lot about them going on. But yeah, this is like a deeply anti-gun group.
Shocking. So I'm just looking at Ground Branch on Steam, and I didn't realize that MicroProse was still in business. I thought they had faded away. But
they recently have been resurrected.
Okay, so it's a zombie game company.
I would assume it's probably similar to like Burma Shave. There's various shaving stuff that you can buy that's Burma Shave, and it's not the Burma Shave that would put the billboards up on Route 66.
Yeah, or you know Winchester.
But
so
by the way, she was before she was with the Joyce Foundation. Just real quick, David, and then I'll let you go. Is she was the legal director for the legal community against legal community against violence, which is now part of Giffords. So yes, she is well versed for the last. That's the start date was 2002. So for the last 20 years, she has been working very, very hard to take our guns away.
Yeah, but it says from one of the developers behind the original Rainbow Six and Ghost Recon games comes a quote unquote thinking man's first person shooter featuring in-depth character and weapon customization. Take your time, think ahead, get the job done. So it has my interest, actually. And it's got some nice graphics.
Yeah, I'm out.
I know that the graphics would confuse you. I understand, but it's they've really tried to go to the next level first-person shooter. So you know things like when you reload, you actually see your hands pull the mag, drop the magazine, grab the next one off your web gear, and pop it in. Right. Things like that.
But back to the original story.
Yes, I'm sorry. We're not talking about the game. We're talking about the story.
Yeah. So one of the things that Nina Vinick was quoted as saying, video games don't directly cause gun violence. She is correct. They don't cause gun violence, period.
If they did, we'd all be dead.
Pretty much.
Right. But with gun violence as the leading cause of death among young people, the usual video game companies like the Activision Blizzard owe it to their customers to consider the message the games like Call of Duty are sending and how games may reinforce the deadly myth that guns make us safer. Well, beyond anything else, Call of Duty, you are playing a member of the military special forces in actual combat and military missions.
Mm-hmm.
It's complete. There's honestly, yes, the two subjects between military action and Joe Schmo civilian carrying a gun are related in that there are guns involved, but that's really about it.
I mean, aren't soldiers one of the mythical only ones which should be allowed to have guns?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, well, quite frankly, yes, soldiers are, it is safer for them to be carrying guns because they need to be able to kill the enemy before the enemy kills them. It's...
Well, it's also, that's one of those catch-22s that always keeps cropping up, is the anti-gun groups have been working very, very hard for a long, long time, but very recently after the shootings in Hyde Park, Chicago, and Buffalo, New York, where both shooters were under the age of 21, and they're trying to say, oh, well, let's make it so that you can't buy a firearm until you're 21 years of age. Well, okay, well, if an 18-year-old person can't walk into a gun shop and at least buy a shotgun, well, then there's no way you should let them go into a battlefield with an M16 and or an M4 or now an M5. And they quickly, oh no, because we need cannon fodder for our next interdiction of world police.
Yep. Yes, indeed.
So yeah, that's, I mean, just the idea of going after video games and somehow video games causing violence again. If they did, we'd all be dead.
It's very simple to disprove this. You don't have to do any study. You don't really have to do any individual studies, etc. Just look at realistic violent video games and specifically realistic first person shooters. Came onto the scene in the mid-90s. And, oh, hey, look at that. The violence graph drops.
That is true.
Because there's really no correlation between them.
Well, I mean, as...
When did Wolfenstein 3D come out?
I want to say 94.
Somewhere around there. That sounds about right.
Oh, 92.
92, okay.
That was somewhere around there.
So I guess it was, and Doom was released in 93.
Yeah. And of course, yeah, wildly popular and yeah, more and more realistic with each, each iteration.
Yep.
Right.
And of course, it was Dungeons and Dragons was causing all the violence.
Right.
And if you want any proof of how violent Dungeons and Dragons are, think about how many people Aaron Paulette has killed just today alone.
I am a mass murderer in my mind.
That's right. I mean, you are killing people in traffic. Remember those little novelty things that you could stick to your dashboard that would have the machine gun sound and a grenade launcher?
Oh, yes.
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 Yeah. Good times. Good times.
Yeah, but that's a great point though, Oddball, about when the Wolfenstein 3D and Doom hit the scene, and of course those games were immediately met with explosions of copycats and mm-hmm. reiterations and leading forward, and of course they became so just popular and ubiquitous, and then online play after that. So now not only are you shooting stuff, but they're real people.
Yeah.
They're actual human beings that you are shooting.
I mean, not literally.
And over the past couple of years, the Battle Royale setup where, yes, we're just going to put everybody together and they can just start shooting at each other.
Yeah.
That's become the popular thing.
I find those incredibly boring.
Oh, it's not my thing, but that's what a lot of people like.
I haven't do play play first person shooters, and I do find that the like team based type stuff, where you know things like capture the flag and like even team deathmatch, where it's you are going up against stuff, especially also in the higher difficulty levels where friendly fire is allowed.
Mm-hmm.
That just gets really exciting on the no, you actually have to confirm your target, because yes, that movement that you're seeing, it might be a bad guy, it might be a good guy. You gotta look.
You don't just shoot at the noise and the movement?
I mean,
so it's not like hunting?
It's not like hunting.
He sounded like a deer.
Yes.
An orange deer with a funny hat.
Or they were wearing white mittens, so I thought it was the tail flagging of the deer. Yeah, good job, guys.
So to put a bow on this, please. I do want to point out that despite all the pearl clutching about this, within the game, if you shoot a civilian, you are penalized. There aren't no consequences. You aren't rewarded for this. Bad things happen.
Mm-hmm. See, now you're just introducing pesky facts into their emotional argument.
Yeah, well, that leads a little bit tangentially to the what was that group that Anna Kasparian started?
Don't know who that is.
There was like this feminist gamer group thing, and it launched Gamergate. I can't even remember what it's called, and I don't care. But the whole bit was they were doing this project to show how sexist games were, and the number one complaint was they clearly weren't playing, or at least avidly playing, the games. And one of the reports that showed how sexist this one was, someone was playing one of the Hitman games where Agent 47 was going through a strip club to eliminate a target, and they were murdering all the strippers just to show that, oh, look at this, you know, the violence against women. And it's one of those, like, it's a Hitman game. Like, it's specifically you are a professional. You are only there to kill your target. Collateral damage is penalized. And yeah, being spotted doing bad things is penalized. And this person's like strangling women in the middle of the dance hall, so all the other strippers are seeing, you know, the murder happening. And it's one of those, like, your score is going to be zero. And I don't know that specific that's the specific game that it was that they were doing, but it might have even been a point where no, you're going to get a game over. Like, you didn't die, nobody shot you, but you're dead to us because you are playing so poorly. So yeah, but because you could do it, then clearly it's rewarded and it's being encouraged.
Yep.
All right. I think it's time for us to play out. Anybody got anything else, or are we good?
The lawsuit printer is still going burnt, so there will be more to follow.
There will be more to follow. Sure. Quick, let's thank our listeners before the next breaking news hits. Thanks to each and every one of our listeners, and a very special thanks to all our supporters on Patreon. To become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/assortedcaliberspodcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of the podcast, plus bonus content like the hilarious blooper reels, the ACP film tracks, and the ACP mag dump.
Also, please remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to us on the platform of your choice, and share the show with your friends, both online and off. If you're still listening at this point, I congratulate you.
I got a blog. It's called weirdworld.com. And I'm also on Handgun Radio with Ryan Machad, who doesn't know how to operate a modern computer.
How does that line go? It's like, you're younger than me. How is it you're a boomer?
Right? I mean, he is the youngest of all of us by like a decade.
I was helping him out with Discord the other day, and I was literally having flashbacks to my mom calling me at like 6 o'clock in the morning because she went to turn on the computer, and And she went to go turn on the computer, and it gave her like a blue screen or something. And my dad was out of town, and he was going to come back, and he was going to be angry because my dad is also terrible with computers, and he just would freak out too. And so she was calling me, and she was asking me what to do, and in such a panic that she wasn't even listening to what I was telling her. It was wonderful. That's what Ryan's like.
You have very strange definitions of wonderful.
Yeah. It's dripping with sarcasm.
You can get more from me at linktree.com/AaronPaulette. That's linktree.ee/AaronPaulette, all one word.
Oh, you didn't do the high pitch E. Aw.
That's linktree.ee.
Thank you. Abba, where can people find you?
We are all children.
Guns, Cars, Tech, and
the hell you say? When was the last time that updated?
It's been a while.
It's also been a while since you've done a segment for us.
It has been. I need to do that too. But I will desperately attempt to do both. And on the Facebooks, at you can always catch me on the Assorted Calibers podcast Facebook page.
And David, tell us where we can find you specifically, where we can read you.
Well, I can be found, of course, on ACP. I occasionally guest on Handgun Radio. I am a contributor to the Blue Collar Prepping blog page, which is bluecollarprepping.blogspot.com. Please check us out. And if you have some good ideas, we're always looking for more people to submit. And I also am a published author, and my books can be found, or books with my stories, I should say. I don't have a book of my own yet. Can be found on Amazon under Brenna Bock, BrennaBock. And hopefully soon another one.
And thanks to Nate Spencer for our music.
You gonna try and have me do one of these things?
Our definitions of wonderful are assorted.
And so is our podcast. Good night, everybody.
Beautiful. Good night.
Good night, folks.
I was trying to help.
You did.